Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Pollett, and I'm an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as he does on these occasions, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Hey there! It's only an island if you look at it from the water. You don't get that one because you haven't seen that movie.
No, that's true.
Yeah, you don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't.
But our listeners do, because they like Jaws. All right, so before we get into this, I just wanted to thank some listeners. We had several people write in and ask us about the topic we're going to tackle today. And I have a list of folks that I want to go through really quickly. So for Bradley, Ryan, Ian, Nate, Vincent, David, Susie, Gerald, Mike, John, and probably more, this podcast is for you.
Wow. Thanks for that long distance dedication, Casey.
Yeah. And that was just from our email. There are probably more on Facebook and probably more on Twitter because everyone wants to know about Facebook and privacy. So we have decided to title this podcast, Does Facebook Hate Privacy?
And as I normally insert our silly jokes at that point in the conversation, I should say, no, actually, that's a complicated question.
Yeah.
We've already talked about Facebook privacy.
That's a good point, actually, Paulette. I'm glad that you, because I was about to just go on, and I had just said before we started recording that we should mention that. Paulette's the one who remembered. Thank you. Yes, back in 2009, back in October, we did a podcast about Facebook applications and your privacy and the complicated relationship there about how if you install apps in your Facebook profile, you are essentially giving third-party access to your profile information. And at the time, there was a question about how much of that information was going to these third-party developers. In some cases, it was just the very basics that the application needed to operate properly. But others, it was confusing. There was way more information going to these developers than you would think would be necessary just to allow you to do whatever the app was designed to do.
And some of the developers were sort of, had sort of questionable credentials.
Yeah.
And there were people going, okay, wait, what am I getting here?
Right.
And you're getting my information.
Why is it that I want to give this virtual puppy to my girlfriend on her Facebook profile page? Why do you need to know my name, race, my
Social Security number,
religious beliefs, my credit card number, the names of all of my friends? Why do you need all that information if I'm just going to give a little picture of a puppy dog? So anyway, that's the whole app situation. That's a third-party situation. We're going to try and stay away from that in this discussion. We're going to focus mainly on Facebook itself.
Yes.
Now, Facebook, of course, started as a project for college students and by college students.
Yes. We probably shouldn't get into the murky genesis of this project because there has been much said about who owned what intellectual property and when and whose idea it really was. Regardless, we know that it came out of a Harvard dorm room.
Right. So what happened behind the doors of that Harvard dorm room is still a mystery. But ultimately, Facebook emerged.
Yes, yeah, so around 2005.
Yeah, so originally it's a system for college students to stay in touch with each other. It eventually spreads to other colleges and becomes a larger network, then rolls out to high school students, and then eventually rolls out to the general public. I think it was 2007 when it finally hit the general public.
Mm-hmm.
So
somewhere around there.
Something like that. So originally, it seemed fairly sane, at least when you created a profile. The information you created was, some of it was publicly viewable on Facebook, and the reason for that was pretty innocent. The whole purpose of a social network is for you to create connections with other people. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't really do that if everyone who joins the network is invisible to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
there might as well not be anything there.
Right. Well, and I'll correct myself in saying this. In 2004, when it actually got started, I mean, the point was it was actually within a very small community.
Yes.
So the point was to, you know, make friends and get to know the people in your closed off community.
Right. So when you start factoring that in, it makes things seem a little less malevolent than you would have people believe from the way things have progressed to the current status.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you don't mind my interrupting.
No, go ahead.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation actually has cataloged some information about sort of in chronological order the way that the privacy policy has changed.
Mm.
And around 2005, you basically – somebody had to be in one of your groups on thefacebook.com.
Right. This was when it was the Facebook.
Yeah. I'm not actually doing an elite thing there. No, that actually was thefacebook.com. Somebody actually had to be in one of your groups. You had to enable them being in your group for them to actually see your information. So, I mean, by default at that point, that was the way it worked.
Yeah. The most anyone would be able to really be able to see would be like your name. And the reason for that is that if you joined the network, you would want to search for your friends and see if they were also on there so that you could send them a request and you could become connected through this network.
Well, yeah, I went to a small college when I was in school. We actually had a campus directory, a paper campus directory that had all of our names and what room we lived in, if we were on campus, or, you know, our address for off campus, our email address, you know, and like I said, a photo of us so that you could identify one another. And if you didn't know somebody's last name, there was a list of names in the back. So you could say, you know, Jonathan, what's Jonathan's last name? You could look up, oh, well, there's six Jonathans. You could flip through and figure out which one it was. You know,
six Jonathans? That was a small college.
Well, you know, about 1,500 in the student body total.
Wow.
So
yeah.
you had about 1,500 in some of your classes at the University of Georgia, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's the idea already existed in other forms, and I'm sure that a lot of colleges are like that. You know, even now they have some kind of campus directory.
Yeah, and this was just essentially an online version of that,
yeah.
Although it had a little more functionality because it let you share photos and other things. So Facebook, when it rolls out to the public, when it first started, there were only certain things that were going to be network-wide viewable.
Right.
Right. And again, this wasn't – there wasn't any bad reason for that. It was also that you could find the people you know so that you could connect with them online.
Mm-hmm.
And That philosophy is pretty innocent. The problem really comes into it when Facebook starts looking into creating a business model. And the real business model for Facebook comes down to advertising.
Yes.
Selling information to advertisers, selling ad space to advertisers. So the more information that you share on Facebook, the more information Facebook has to sell to people who want to advertise directly to you.
Right. And how could this possibly go wrong?
Well, clearly, now, if you're taking it from purely a business perspective, mm-hmm. all right, so I'm a businessman. I'm an amoral businessman, not immoral. I am amoral. Morals do not factor into my business decisions, okay? So I'm just looking at the best way to maximize my profits.
Right.
I have a company where I've got 500 million people using my product.
Right.
I have the option to either let people, as soon as they join my company or become a customer to my company, I have the option to either let them dictate to me which things they want to participate, how much information they want to share with me, or I can make it so that the default setting is you share everything with me until you tell me otherwise.
Right.
Clearly, if I make my money through information means more money. So my choice is going to be, let's go with the default. I want as much information as I possibly can get from all these users, because the more information I have, the more money I make.
Right. Now, put yourself, if you will, in the shoes of the advertiser. You want to spend money to advertise a product or a service, and you want to reach as many people as possible. Ideally, you want to reach as many people as possible who actually have an interest in what you're selling.
Yeah.
Right? So the thing is, Facebook offers a very, I won't say unique opportunity, but a really awesome opportunity for people to do that, because Facebook can say, look, here are a bunch of people living in Omaha, Nebraska, and that's where you do business. And this subgroup is really interested in buying a new car, because, you know, we could tell that they are, you know, getting this, they're interested in looking at cars. They have cars on their likes, things that they have already thumbed up. We know that they are a certain age,
yeah,
and a certain demographic.
At least 16 years old, that kind of thing. And
yeah. So we can offer you this information, and we're going, well, shoot, yeah, let's go ahead and advertise to this particular subgroup of people, because there's a really much higher chance that somebody in this group is going to buy what it is that we're going to be selling them.
Right. Instead of carpet bombing, you're doing a surgical strike.
Right.
Right. You're narrowing down the huge audience to an audience that is much more likely to respond to your advertising.
Right.
And so it's called targeted advertising.
Yes.
You know, that you are targeted based upon the information that you share, which kind of classifies you in a way. And it classifies you
classifies
you in numberless ways.
Well, that's
because for one advertiser, you're classified as a consumer because of a certain set of criteria.
Mm-hmm.
For a totally different advertiser, they're still interested in you, but it's for a completely different set of criteria, and it all is based upon how much information you are sharing on Facebook.
Right. So you've got the advertiser who is buying into Facebook saying, you know, here's some money. You have a really great opportunity for me to advertise, you know, a targeted audience. Facebook's going, hey, we've got lots of information that you can use to advertise. And then you have the third party, which would be you and me, going, hey, wait a minute, what are you doing with my information? Why are you, you know, giving away my information to these third-party advertisers?
Yeah, actually, I think the best summation I've heard so far
mm-hmm.
about the entire situation came out of an internet discussion. It was in a chat room, and one person said, and I wish I could remember who it was, but one person summed it up as saying, Facebook's customers are advertisers.
Yes.
Facebook's product are the users.
Yes.
So the users are being sold to advertisers. So, you know, normally when we think of customer and business operator, we would think, oh, well, I have a Facebook account. That means I'm a Facebook customer. Facebook is providing me a service, and I'm a customer of that company.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at it from Facebook's perspective, their customer is the advertiser who wants to give them money in return for a certain a certain slice of the users. And so, you know, it's kind of a cold-hearted way of looking at it, but the same way, that's how Facebook is able to make the money it needs to provide this platform for users to go and create profiles and interact with one another. I mean, ultimately, if Facebook did not do this, they would have to find some other way to generate enough revenue to support this massive platform.
Well, corporations themselves have no feelings. They are, as you pointed out, amoral.
Right.
And, you know, the law does treat them as people. So essentially, that's who we're talking about, but they don't really, you know, there's no offense. It's just business.
And Facebook is a private company right now.
Yes, that's true. So they don't have shareholders looking to them to maximize value.
Yeah. So if and when Facebook goes public, because they've talked about going public,
but have
not given any timeline as to when that might happen. But should Facebook go public, I would say you could expect it to get worse rather than better, in the sense that When you go public, people purchase stock in the company and people want a return on that investment. And usually what that means is they want the company to maximize profits at any opportunity. And in the case of maximizing profits, again, since Facebook is in the business of selling information of users to advertisers, that means that that situation is just going to get worse. Let's talk a little bit about, all right, let's say that you were to create a Facebook profile today.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The default setting, if you did not tweak any privacy settings, that's really where the big brouhaha is brewing right now.
Yeah, it started out as a kerfuffle, but it is now a full-blown brouhaha.
Yeah, it was.
We have moved up.
We have definitely gone to brouhaha 4.
We're almost at Rush Moving Pictures.
Yes.
For those of you who get that joke.
So, originally, if you had created a Facebook profile, the stuff that would get shared with the network would be like your name.
Right.
Everything else would be contained within your group of friends or the immediate network that you belong to. So, for example, the school you went to,
mm-hmm.
like back when it was a college-only thing.
Right.
So there'd be certain things that, by default, everyone could see, which would be essentially your name so that they could look you up. Everything else, they would have to either be your friend or have to be within your immediate network to see the information, like maybe your photos or whatever.
Well, yeah.
Or your status updates.
Well, here we go. Back to the EFF's timeline. In 2006, the Facebook said basically that, you know, yes, you have some control over your privacy. People in your school and in your local area will be able to see who you are, but otherwise, no. And then in 2007, they said they would start sharing your name and your photo and your school name. You know, this is as it was making the transition into a public, social networking mm-hmm. site, unless you said you didn't want to do that. But that was the default, was, you know, name, photo, and the school that you're going to. And then that's when everything started to change in 2009-ish.
Yeah, 2009 was when they tried to launch Beacon.
Beacon, 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 Beacon!
You made that same joke the last podcast.
I know, but I always think it.
Okay, so anyway, because I listened to the last one before we did this one. So
it's been 9 months?
Beacon was arrangement Facebook had with other websites, where you would go if you were a customer on the other website and you happened to have been logged into Facebook and didn't log out.
Right.
You go over, let's say, like Amazon.
Yeah.
So you go to Amazon, you buy a book.
Right.
Normally, if you wanted to share that information, you would go back to Facebook and say, "Hey, I just bought such and such book. I can't wait to read it."
With Beacon, you don't have to do that,
right,
because when Beacon was enabled, it would tell everybody automatically
what you purchased,
what you bought.
Yeah. So, and if you're buying, you know, like Terry Pratchett's The Color of Magic, you might not mind the fact that it's being shared with all your friends.
In fact, I would suggest that you do tell everybody that you bought that
book. But let's say you purchased Living with Cancer.
Right.
And you had not told anyone that you had cancer.
Exactly.
Or that someone you love has cancer, and that's the book you bought the book for someone else. That is the kind of information you might not necessarily want to immediately go to your Facebook profile and be shared with everyone else on Facebook.
Right.
The Beacon ended up going away after a class action lawsuit. It was kind of scuttled in September 2009. And it's kind of slowly crept back in a different form.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of the company and founder, contentiously saying,
yes,
the founder is basically saying that, he had issued an apology when Beacon went away, saying, we did this the wrong way. And that kind of suggested at the time that it was going to come back in some form.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of an opt-in situation. Before it was opt-out.
Right.
And we'll get into a little bit of that in a second. So let's say you've created a profile right now.
Uh-huh.
The default setting right now, everything, all of your information by default is public except for your contact information, which remains only visible to you and your friends by default,
mm-hmm.
and your birthday, which remains visible only to you, your friends, and your friends of friends by default.
Right.
But everything else, like the friends you have, the networks you belong to, your status updates, the things that you like, your pictures, all of that will be public by default.
Right.
So that means that even if you've just created your profile today and you haven't tweaked any settings, someone who has never met you before, you don't know this person, you don't want them to be your Facebook friend, could go to your profile and see practically all the information you've put down so far, except for your contact info and your birthday.
Right.
That is kind of creepy.
Yep.
Now, Facebook had received lots and lots of complaints when it essentially moved to this model.
Yes.
And their response was to overhaul their privacy settings a couple of times, actually. And by the time this goes out, who knows, it may have been overhauled again.
It happened earlier in 2010, and I think that's when it went into a full-fledged brouhaha, because they really opened up more information. And Mark Zuckerberg had essentially said at the time, look, this is a social networking site. You're supposed to be social. Why would you want to keep your information private if you join the site to network with people?
Yeah.
Which is,
And we've, Chris and I talked about this the other day, just in a brief conversation. You think about two different archetypical Facebook users.
Yes.
You've got one type of Facebook user who has no real concern about privacy. Not that they're ignorant about it, just that they don't really, that's not a concern.
It's not an issue.
Yeah, it's not an issue. So they're fine with sharing everything. They want to meet as many people as possible. They're very social and they want to maximize that impact on Facebook. So they're willing to not just make connections with friends, but they want complete strangers to be able to see their information, because who knows? The complete stranger might just be their next best friend.
There you go.
Then you've got the other type of Facebook user, who is someone who sees the value of Facebook but wants to use Facebook to stay in touch with a very specific group of people.
Yes.
And beyond that group of people, this person has really no interest in Facebook. They don't want to use Facebook to meet new people. They don't even necessarily want folks they know to be able to find them on Facebook easily, because in some cases it might be folks they don't particularly like.
Right.
And you don't want to have to deal with online harassment if you already had to deal with it in person. So so this kind of Facebook user doesn't want that default of sharing everything with everyone. This Facebook user wants to be able to keep that as much information shared with just the immediate group of friends as possible.
Yes.
And it's kind of interesting, because Chris sort of represents not quite that level of Facebook user, but not too far from that Facebook user. And I represent kind of not the, hey, look at me, Facebook user, but I'm closer to that side than the other.
Yeah. Yeah. We for the purposes of the argument, we were talking about extremes.
Yeah. Both Chris and I both agree that Facebook's approach is the wrong one to have, because the right approach would be that you give the user the option to opt in to what he or she wants to share at the very beginning.
Well, privacy advocates agree with us. And the thing is, I think it would, just this is my personal opinion, I think it would engender more trust in Facebook as a company if Facebook said, sure, why don't you start out private, meet some people, and as you gradually get used to this and like it more, then you can open yourself up to more and more people. They do have a lot of very attractive functions on the website. You know, the gaming community is thriving and other applications are doing very well too. There are things that keep you there on the site. They're, you know, in web terms, they're called sticky.
Yeah.
It's a very sticky website. And, you know, it would be very good for them to engender trust by doing this. But a lot of people are distrusting Facebook right now because they say, hey, look, you're just open. You're here. That's the deal.
Now, we should say that you can go into privacy settings and adjust your privacy settings so that you do have the experience that, say, Chris would want. You can have the experience where you restrict your information to just your group of friends and no one beyond that, and then you have much more control of your information, and that's a good thing. And I actually do follow that for most of my information. Very little of my information is actually shared with the entire network. Most of it is friends or friends of friends at most. And some of it's just me. I don't share information beyond, you know, I have it in there so that if I ever one day decide to change it, I can, but I don't share it outside of, it's just there in the account.
Yeah.
So things like my phone number, for example, I don't share that with anyone, even my closest friends. So in that sense, you know, Facebook's doing a good job, but what would be better is that, let's say that you create your Facebook account today, and then as part of the account creation process, it then took you to privacy settings, and it allowed you to choose which things you wanted to share automatically. So you would check boxes to share stuff.
Right.
Right now, it's the opposite way. Think of all the boxes as being checked, and you have to uncheck things. That's the opting out.
Yep.
To opt in creates... I think opting in is better because it means that you've made a conscious decision to share that information. And that would be the more responsible way to move for your users. But again, as we pointed out, Facebook's customers are the advertisers, not the users. So that's probably why Facebook's a little reluctant to take that route, mm-hmm. where you leave that in the user's hands. It's, you know, the way Facebook's stance is right now, the company can say, well, sure, the default is you share everything, but you can change that at any time. I don't see what the problem is.
Right.
You know, as opposed to saying that the default is you don't share it with anyone outside of your group of friends unless you choose to.
Right. You know, it's funny because since they have revised their settings a couple times in 2010, you know, they actually, in their most recent change back in May, Facebook actually went to the trouble of simplifying the settings so that you could understand it a little bit better. And they restored some of the missing settings that they had removed before. But privacy advocates are not letting up. People are still giving them a hard time. And, you know, I think that the company sort of expected that once they made these changes, that this would all sort of blow over.
That the heat would go away.
But it's not. And there's still a lot of people upset. In fact, mm-hmm. on May 31st, 2010, there was an official Quit Facebook Day.
Which, unfortunately, was the wrong day to hold it.
31,000 people. Left the service.
I think they would have had way more people leave if they had not held it on what in the United States is Memorial Day.
That's probably true.
And the reason I say that is because it's a lot easier to quit something that's computer related when you're sitting in front of your computer.
Instead of out by the barbecue?
Exactly. If they had done that on June 1st, when everyone is back in front of the computer.
They might have gotten 52,000 people.
Yeah, easily nearly doubling the number. They could have had a much bigger impact, I think. I think having it on a holiday was a mistake. Holidays and weekends, that's a mistake. You should do it on a weekday when people are trying to avoid schoolwork or work.
But that illustrates, though, I don't think it would have been anywhere near the 400 to 500 million.
Million. Yeah.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of
people. Or a lot of accounts. I'm sure some people have multiple accounts. But but yeah, that just imagining that only 31,000 people were that upset. You know, I'm inclined to say that there are probably more people who are that upset enough to actually quit. The thing is, Facebook is an extremely sticky website, and people want to stay. I think
it's really useful. They want to stay. They just want Facebook to behave in a way that feels more responsible toward the user.
I just wonder how long Facebook is going to feel as though it can get away with selling people's information and defaulting people to fully public.
We should also mention that we're recording this podcast shortly after the D8 conference, and Zuckerberg took the stage for a question and answer session and was not very comfortable during it. I think it's safe to say that.
Yeah.
He was asked point blank a couple of times about Facebook's stance on privacy and their philosophy toward privacy. And he was very evasive and uncomfortable, I would say, trying to answer those questions. Ultimately, the answers kind of came across as suggesting that privacy is not something that it's not that they ignore it. It's that I think the future is that privacy won't be as important to the average person on the internet. And it may be that they're trying to push for that future a little hard right now, trying to get there a little faster than they would naturally. But saying that out loud is almost like suicide. So Zuckerberg did his best to kind of dance around it and not address the issue.
Well, Facebook is hardly the only internet company to to cause writers to write the headline, "Privacy is dead." I've seen it in a number of places now.
And yeah, Google kind of gets that too.
Yeah, I mean, especially after the Google Buzz kerfuffle. Haha.
Yeah, that did not quite reach brouhaha levels because not enough people had noticed what the heck Buzz was.
Really close. Well, that and it happened on the very first day.
Yeah, that's a bad first day.
But I don't know. You know what? We should get people to write us on Facebook, on our Stuff HSW Facebook account, and tell do you think privacy is dead on the internet?
Yeah, I am curious to hear. I would like to hear what you listeners think about the issue of privacy and the internet. Is it dead? Is it a good thing that if it is dead, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? And what can we expect the future to look like on the internet with privacy kind of taking a back seat?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, I think a lot of people think that it's over with. They're the age of being private, totally private anyway, is gone. So I'd like to hear what people think.
I agree. So keep an eye out. We'll try and post something on the Facebook page when this podcast goes live so that you can respond to that if you like. Or you can do like our friend CH did.
Mm-hmm.
Send us a little listener mail. You like how I did that?
I did.
So this is CH. CH says about our 200 years of innovations.
Oh, yes.
He says, "You missed one, guys. You live in Atlanta. I challenge you to go outside around 2 in the afternoon for an hour or so and not include air conditioning on your list. Great show as always. Thanks." CH from Little Rock, Arkansas. You know what, CH? That's a good point. Air conditioning is very important.
My only counter to that would be outside, not such a problem. It's inside. When the air conditioning is off, it's a problem.
Considering that I've been spending the last 7 weekends out in the Georgia heat in a doublet, I value every single second of air conditioning I can experience.
Cool.
Yes. Thanks a lot, CH. If any of you want to write us, our address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, and we will talk to you again, possibly on Facebook, really soon.
If you're a Tech Stuff fan, be sure to check us out on Twitter. Tech Stuff HSW is our handle, and you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TechStuffHSW.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the HowStuffWorks homepage.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.